Brad, so honored to have with us retired Lieutenant Paul Vance, J. Paul Vance from the Connecticut State Police in our Touch Points Rehab Interview Chair. Lieutenant, welcome to the program.
Gentlemen, thank you for having me.
Welcome, welcome. I'll tell you something right now. There was nobody, and I'm going to say it, there was nobody like you, and there won't be. Close to 43 years, and I will never forget. When I think of you, I think of two things. I think of Southern Connecticut, that terrible tragedy, and I think of Connecticut Day at the Big E. Those are the things when I think of Paul Vance.
That's great. And, you know, the Big E, Brad, I got to give credit where credit's due. You got it going. You organized it, and it always made our chest puff out as we marched in that parade as troopers, as you would introduce us, as the finest state police department in the entire country. That's exactly what he would say.
And this will be my 43rd year.
43rd, yeah.
Yeah.
Paul, when did you become communications director? How did that come about?
Well, it was interesting because I was assigned to many, many different phases of my career. I've had the opportunity to serve in many different capacities. Started out in Litchfield, became a detective, an instructor at the academy, part of the aviation unit to inter-hospital transfers, via a helicopter, and the list goes on and on and on, canine handler. And then I became a resident trooper in the town of Prospect for 16 years. And finally, I'd taken a promotional exam and did fairly well, but I figured, now let me stay where I'm at. I like doing this work, interacting with the community. And one of the commanders called me up and wanted to know where my head was. He said, it's time to, you know, move up, move on, if you will, and start helping the younger people, younger troopers, if you will. I took a promotion and went to Litchfield. Litchfield's a wonderful place, especially this time of year. It's a great barracks. There's great people up there. I got a call from the colonel probably 6 months into that assignment to report to his office. And I'm going to tell you right up front, to report to the colonel's office is not a good thing. and I didn't know what it was all about, but I was instructed to be there and understanding we're a semi-military organization. We do what we're told. And I showed up to the colonel's office, and at which time he told me I was being assigned to the public information office. And it went from there. And it was just a great assignment, a tremendous assignment.
And how many years did you do that?
I did that about 17 years. And I got to give credit, too. I went to some great schools, learned how to do it. But I learned more from folks like you, from people in the media, the electronic media, the print media, social media, everybody. I used to say it's like a marriage. You got to work at it, you know, and I used to meet with news directors and do interviews and see what we could do as an agency to better communicate with the media so they could communicate with the public.
And that's came across.
Yeah. That's so important.
And you were always available.
Well, yeah. My wife will tell you some stories about that. she was an ER nurse, and, you know, she worked very early in the morning, and there were 3 o'clock in the morning phone calls where, you know, she'd say, Paul, would you take it to the next room, please, so the rest of us can make work in the morning. Like yourself from last night, the ball game.
Right.
But I tell you, I really enjoyed it. I met some great people. And really, the important part and the foundation of the whole thing was making sure that our customers, the people of Connecticut, knew what was going on. You know, if you woke up or you came home and you saw police activity, ambulance, fire, what have you, activity, first question is, am I safe? And the second question is, what's going on? And that was our job. That was my job to make sure my team, not just me, but my team, got that information out to the people.
You know, I've got to tell you, and I was right here the day of that terrible tragedy.
Newtown.
In Newtown.
Yeah.
And it affected everybody. There's no question. But, and I'm sure you've had people tell you this, but as you looked at the whole scene, and you watched Lieutenant Paul Vance. This is Brad Davis speaking. Everything seemed calmer than it should have been because you were in control. You could tell that you felt the passion, that you felt the terrible loss. But yet, that of all the things, that is, I'll never, ever forget the way you acted that day.
Well, I appreciate that, Brad. That's very kind to say, but I want to say one other thing about that. I was the person standing talking about all the great work that the troopers, the detectives, the local law enforcement agencies, the federal officers, everybody was there. That team was there, the boots on the ground, if you will. They had such a difficult time, difficult job to do, but they did it with honor. And quite frankly, I was humbled and honored to stand there and speak about the work that they do. As a matter of fact, I can honestly say that through my career, there are so many things that they do in law enforcement today, the Connecticut State Police and all our brothers and sisters in law enforcement, that go unnoticed. And I was able to stand and talk about the good and the bad. Unfortunately, but you know, even to stand in front of a camera or a microphone and talk about, you know, a toy drive, a food drive, coaching teams, there's just so much that our people do to give back, and I was privileged to be able to talk about it. I really was.
Nothing prepares you for a Newtown. So how did you steel yourself to get before these batteries of microphones from across the world on an almost hour by hour basis?
Yeah. It was training. It certainly kicked in, and I was fortunate to have a great deal of training in media relations from different venues, and learning from our partners. You know, I would make an appointment to sit down with assignment editors, news directors, or what have you, and sit down, and we had two questions. You know, my first question was, what can we do to make your job a little easier? And then we'd turn it around, and they'd ask me that same question. What can we do to help you do your job in law enforcement? And that was important, because every time you sat down with folks to discuss how to get the message out, if you will, how to be more effective, more informative, you learn something. And I, you know, I was a policeman for a long time, but I'd steal that information and bring it back. And we try to interject it into our daily operation. And when Newtown happened, it ripped your heart out. It was just absolutely horrific. But we had to tell the people of Connecticut what was happening. We had to let them know that, as I said before, that they were safe.
Right. Lieutenant, did you think when you started almost 43 years ago that this was going to be the kind of career that it was? Did you have any idea at that time?
No, I was young and energetic. I got to be honest with you. I started when I was 21. So, and it's the greatest job in the world. I would, if I had the opportunity to do it, I'd do it all again. It truly is a rewarding career, to make a difference in someone's life. I recently had someone come up and thank me for incarcerating them. And it was, my eyebrows raised, and
really?
I said, sir, you know, I hope you're doing well. He said, I'm doing fine. He said, I'm now a father, a husband. He said, soon to be a grandfather. He said, and you made a difference in my life. So it's some good that comes out of some bad sometimes. And it's, you know, and you can think about, you know, all the good things. I've had young people walk up to me in the mall when I was a resident trooper. I'd teach the DARE program, Drug Abuse Resistance Education Program. And they say, trooper, do you remember me? And, of course, I'm going to say yes. I mean, you know, but that was fifth graders, and that was many, many, many years ago. Yeah. But it's an honor to make a difference and to speak to different agencies and do crime prevention. And we do a lot of that. You know, just stopping someone from not wearing a seatbelt. People say, what are you wasting your time for? Well, we've seen too many people projected and lose their lives because not wearing their belts. So when the men and women in law enforcement do their work, they're making a difference. They're truly making a difference.
Yeah. Well, again, this is an honor to have you here with the two of us today. It really, really is. And, of course, we are just so happy, Dan and myself, to have someone with us this morning that we've got so much respect for, Lieutenant J. Paul Vance, who has just retired. Well, on the 31st of March, he retired after close to 43 years with the Connecticut State Police.
Brad, this morning we're broadcasting from the Senate Travel Studio. We want to remind our audience about that. Lieutenant, you've been retired now for what, 19 days? What kind of adjustment has it been?
Well, you know, it's certainly difficult getting up in the morning and trying to figure out what to do, but my lovely wife has made sure that I have plenty to do. So I'm enjoying it. There's you know, little change, if you will, and I'm looking forward to staying active and staying involved. I don't have a rocking chair yet, and I don't plan on sitting in one in a corner in the near future.
And, you know, one of the things that you seem to do, and I get this from watching you and all the parades you've been in and everything else, that you like to get out.
Yes, sir.
And so do you plan on, you know, vacations and traveling and things like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Matter of fact, we're going very soon on a little trip to Ireland, and my wife and I are going to spend a little time together, which, you know, we don't give credit to first responders like we should all the time. And by that, I mean, you know, they work holidays. They miss birthday parties. They miss recitals, et cetera. And I miss my fair share of them, just like everybody else did. And now it's time to reconnect. We're going to start. My wife and I spent some time together. We have 6 grandchildren, which, boy, they keep us busy with games and all the above. And I'm looking forward to that.
But how long have you been married?
45 years.
Wow. Well, it's been a while. Look at and 40, almost 45 as a police officer. Yeah, that is incredible.
Yeah, it's been a good ride, and I'm looking forward to staying active. I'll stay involved in public safety, public service. I definitely will. It's been my life. Even prior to becoming a trooper, I was a paramedic, and I work for an ambulance company, and so I've always felt like, you know, you don't just take. You got to give back. You got to try to give back.
What motivated you to pursue law enforcement?
That's an interesting question, and you know, revert back to the fact that I was an EMT and a paramedic, and going to accident scenes and doing a lot of that work, and I loved it. I absolutely loved it, but I saw the pride and the integrity of many of the troopers I interacted with, especially in some of the smaller cities and towns that we serviced, and highway accidents and what have you. And it just drew me to investigate and look at it a little bit more. And I made the right decision. There is no finer group of men and women, as far as I'm concerned, than the men and women of Connecticut State Police. They serve 24/7. A lot of people don't know they're on call 24 hours a day. They have to be subject to recall. And I can't tell you how many times you thought your shift was over and it was, no, come on, we got to go do this. It's our job. And you go and do it. It's just like when I took my last assignment, it was, we're soldiers. We do what we're told. And we certainly do everything we can to serve the people of Connecticut. That's our job.
I'm glad to hear you say that, by the way, because we get calls on occasion from people who say, well, how come the state police get to keep their cruisers 24 hours
sure.
a day? Well, I think you just answered that question. They're on call 24 hours a day.
They got to be subject to recall, and you can't say, I can't come in because my wife has our car. Mm-hmm. You know, there was one night my wife and I were dressed, ready to go to a dinner dance, literally dressed. Babysitter was there, we're ready to go, and the phone rang. And I got undressed, put my uniform on, and went to work. And that's... Unfortunately, the state didn't pay for those dinner dance tickets, but that we never used. But that was our responsibility. And when you raise your right hand and swore to serve and protect, that was something that you knew you had to do.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you, you did it well. And I go back to the Big E and those parades and Connecticut Day, and you will always be remembered. I know by me and by many others because you used to go around. You'd walk around the building, the Connecticut building, and you'd shake hands and you'd be a pal and so on and so forth. It was just such a great part of Connecticut Day because you were.
I appreciate that, Brad. And as you well know, it's a matter of breaking down that barrier and letting people know that, you know, we're human beings also.
We're going to take a break. Lieutenant Vance is going to be with us until 8 o'clock this morning. We've got a lot to talk about with our guest.
News, weather, traffic, politics with Brad and Dan. This is the Brad and Dan Show on the Talk of Connecticut.
25 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock in the morning. You never, ever know who is listening to the radio. Dan, and guess who's on the line with us this morning? The former First Lady, Nikki O'Neill, out there in East Hampton. Nikki, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. I didn't expect to be on the air. All I asked. Could you get an address where I can send him a note?
No, 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 no. You don't do that on this program. You come on the air.
Oh, well, I'm not calling for that reason.
I know you're not. I know. But I knew that the lieutenant would want to talk with you.
Well, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Of course, Mrs. O'Neill. There's no question about it. It's a pleasure to speak with you. And
Listen, I'm, you know, you bring me to tears.
Well, I don't want to do
so
that.
You are so humble. You are, honestly, you are so humble. I mean, I've been listening to you. You don't take credit for all the things you've done. You give all the credit to all the men that you worked with and the men you worked for. And I just think it's wonderful. And I've been trying to get an address where I could send you a note ever since I heard you were retiring, and of course no one will give me one.
Oh, we can do that.
Give an address to Brad.
Absolutely.
That's all I call for is to get an address.
I got to tell you this, Mrs. O'Neill, as I was packing my office up, and believe me, my wife helped me do that because there were certain things that I couldn't take home because we didn't have room for the State Police Museum. But I got to tell you, one thing she did let me take home was a photograph of Governor O'Neill with his car, if you will, his official car, and a note that he signed, best wishes, Governor O'Neill, and presented that to me. And that's in my home. That's in my home.
Well, you deserve all the credit that you get, believe me. And I've enjoyed so much listening to you. You've had so many experiences. I hope when you get up in the morning, you're not quite sure what to do. Maybe you sit down and start a book.
Well, that's been talked about, believe me.
What an idea.
People would love to. I mean, you can tell stories. I know you can't tell all the information, but you could tell enough stories that people would buy that book.
I appreciate that, ma'am. I truly do. And there's some great years. And
that's right. Good memories.
You probably don't remember, but I was actually at the governor's mansion when I was assigned during one of the inaugurations. And you and Governor O'Neill, we sat at your dining room table and had lunch with you. And you're just wonderful people, and I truly am honored to have the opportunity to speak with you.
Well, that's very nice of you. If I made the lunch, it was probably just a tuna fish sandwich from an Irish cook.
The best of the best, believe me.
I don't want to keep you from your interview, but I just said to the gentleman that answered the phone, just tell Brad to get me an address. He has my number. He can call me. So I didn't plan on being on the air, but it's a pleasure to talk to you. And someday you want to come down to sunny East Hampton and sit on my deck with your bride, I'd love it.
You're a great lady. Thank you very much. I'm honored to speak with you, ma'am. I really mean it.
Well, thank you. It's an honor for me, sir.
Appreciate that.
Okay, tell Brad to find your address for me.
I will. Okay. I will.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
sir. I better.
What a great call.
Huh?
That's a great call from our former
first
lady. And she
didn't want to go on the air. Yeah. This is typical Nikki.
No.
But she is...
By the way, if anybody has any questions for Lieutenant Vance, you can give us a call. 888-574-2723. Lieutenant, we were talking before during the break about technology, how things have changed over the 17 years when you were the head of the Public Information Office. Talk about that.
Well, that was interesting. And reverting back to some of the serious incidents we've had here in Connecticut, social media became a hot button topic, and even reporters in the field wanted, and it's a competitive field, they wanted to be first to get the message out. And where I found difficulty with social media was kind of a double-edged sword. One was the fact that if some misinformation or rumor information got out there and someone said it publicly, for example, asking me a question at a podium, then, right away people would start tweeting that or sending it out via social media when, in fact, it might not be accurate. And so we had to change, and we had to make sure that we addressed those issues. And I used to call it rumor control. We had to control the rumors so misinformation didn't get out there. And I can remember a specific tragedy, and I won't dwell on it, but where a reporter from the New York City area blurted out the name of a suspect, which was wrong. And to this day, if I go and Google it, it'll come up because someone tweeted it right away because they wanted to be first, but that was wrong. So that was a major change. And folks in my office, we had to work very, very hard to ensure that we were able to get the correct, accurate, timely information out. And that to me was the most important so that the media could do their job. They could get that conversation and that message out to the people that we serve.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Let's go to Bob in East Hartford. Robert, good morning, good morning.
Good morning, Brad and Dan. And special good morning to Trooper Vance. Seen you on the TV many times.
Good morning, sir.
Thank you for the protection you gave us all the years, the 43 years. My dad was a state trooper. I just did the math. He retired just about the time that you were started.
Oh, okay.
And from the early 50s to the mid-70s, he was a trooper. I know how many times he had to rush out. In fact, I remember chasing somebody one time over the Charter Oak Bridge when we were going to my grandmother's house. He had to drop us off and go out and get somebody.
And you go do what you had to do, absolutely. And you know, that's something that's very interesting. We talk about the cruisers and, you know, all the cruisers on the road. And there are many times, and I'll tell you a very quick story. I had my wife in my cruiser, and there was a bank robbery probably three-quarters of a mile away. And I dropped my wife off at a car dealership on the corner. I said, go look at cars. I'll be back. And went up and helped the troopers do their job and apprehend the suspect. Came back, and unbeknownst to me, I bought a car.
You should have charged it to the state.
Yeah. put it,
thanks for your... I know most people that are getting on their way or what the troopers have to put up with, and I just want to thank you, because I know, not firsthand, but I know secondhand what the troopers do.
No, I appreciate that, sir, very much.
Congratulations on your retirement. It's well-deserved, I'm sure.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate that.
Thanks. 7:42, 18 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock, and the calls are pouring in here. Dominic. Oh, the one and only Dominic from Norfolk, Dan.
Yep.
Dominic, good morning, good morning.
Good morning. You got a mentor of mine on your radio show right now, and I put him right up there like Ella Grasso and O'Neill, and also Joe Fergale from Kanan's Barracks. I'm sure you know Joe Fergale.
Absolutely,
huh?
Yes, sir.
Joe Fergale?
Yes, sir, I do.
Yes,
absolutely.
Fodder Boy, icons of the Northwest Corner. But I just want to call and let you know that, you know, when you were at the, when they did not demoted you, but put you down to another position, you know, I said to myself, I know the feeling. I've had that happen to me a few times in life, but you pulled your britches up and you went and you did what you were told. And that's the old school way of thinking. And I was going to ask you this one question. I'm going to hang up. I enjoyed your years of service, but should marijuana be legalized in Connecticut? I say no, but I'm going to let it go to you. And thank you for your years of service.
I appreciate the comment, sir. Thank you very much. That's a tough one, and our legislature's going to have to really, really discuss that particular topic. You know, drunk driving is something that we work very, very hard at. Some of the neighboring states are legalizing and doing different things with marijuana, and our legislators are really going to have to sit down and discuss this thoroughly because it presents its own set of issues that really need to be determined as to what's best for the people of Connecticut.
Aren't you glad we opened up the phones?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
I am.
I love it. I absolutely appreciate it.
Let's go to Shara in Hartford. Is it Shara?
Sandra. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, Paul Vance, you are the best thing that ever happened to the state of Connecticut Police. And you are... just amazing. And I wish you a wonderful retirement and a good trip to Ireland. And just God bless you and your family.
Well, that's very kind of you, ma'am. And I greatly appreciate the comments. And I got to say that I had the honor and pleasure of working with some of the best men and women in law enforcement that anyone could ever have had the honor to work with. And
well,
I'm going to miss
true.
Them. I'm going to miss
that's
them.
That's true. And I always used to see you at the Big E. I'd find you there, and every year I'd get an opportunity to speak to you for a few minutes, and I looked forward to that always.
Oh, thank you, ma'am. Thank you very much. That was a great thing to meet so many nice people, and especially Brad Davis. I mean, I got to see him every Connecticut day, and
right.
We always interacted and had a wonderful time up there.
Right. Well, all the best to you.
Thank you, ma'am, very much.
Thanks, Sandra.
He's here.
And the calls are coming in, Brad.
Pouring in for Mr. Vance.
Retired Lieutenant J. Paul Vance. Let's go to Jim in Windsor. Welcome to Brad and Dan, Jim.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have this question for the lieutenant. With all his years of experience, I'm sure he recognizes a few state police and local police that shouldn't be on the force. They only may be 1 out of 1,000 or 10,000, but what's his suggestion as he retires, looking back on what towns can do to eliminate those few bad apples that tarnish the reputation of the vast majority of the good, hardworking policemen and state police?
That's a great question, sir. I'll answer this in several different ways. But one is that we need to have enough people to do the work. And I always equate it to a fire department. No one likes to spend millions of dollars for a fire truck until, God forbid, you have a fire at your residence. And you're saying, where is that million-dollar fire truck to save my home? You know, in law enforcement, it's a very, very difficult job to have to make a split-second decision. And I don't think many times that we take the time to sit back and think about it. There's training that we use in the state police department, and many municipal departments do too, where it's shoot, don't shoot, for example. And you're sitting on the edge of your seat, you know, trying to determine if you should shoot at this training video, which is what it is, or not. Until you've experienced that, it's really hard to, give explain away that you make that decision. It's your training, it's your experience. Certainly, there are people that are going to make mistakes, and I won't even call them bad apples. I see people that have dedicated their lives to law enforcement and make a mistake with a domestic violence issue or other issues, and you deal with them accordingly. But I think 99.99%, almost just short of 100% of local, state, and federal law enforcement officers are out there doing the right thing.
And you know this, every day you get up and put that uniform on and you walk out of the house, your life is on the line.
And, you know, and that's absolutely true. And, you don't want to dramatize it, if you will, but you certainly, you know, take that into consideration every single day that you get dressed and you go to work, that something could change your life dramatically in a mere second.
Oh, it's just an honor to have who's here with us today.
And he'll be with us till 8 o'clock.
He'll be right up till 8 o'clock. And by the way, we've got a feature coming up, and then we'll get back. Thank you all. And you can call 1-888-574-2723. Let's go to Frank in Watertown. Frank, good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Brad. It's John from Bethlehem. You didn't take my name.
John in Bethlehem. Go ahead, John.
I just wanted to wish the lieutenant well. I met him under some serious circumstances about 25 years ago when I started delivering home heating oil at a young age. I made a little mistake in Summit Road and Prospect, and he corrected me very quickly. And since that day, I have never gotten a traffic violation. But I think he put something in my head a long time ago.
I appreciate that, sir. And, back then we did what we had to do to keep each other safe, yourself as well as the other people, and I really appreciate the kind words. It's very nice of you.
And again, I always saw you at the Big E along with Brad. Dan, we got to get you up there.
Yeah, oh,
that's
yeah.
Right.
Get you into the mix.
I'll be there. Yep.
Well, Lieutenant, I wish you well in all your future endeavors, and thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir, very much. I greatly appreciate that.
754. All right. And he is an 18-wheeler.
Oh, yeah.
He drives an 18-wheeler.
He sure does.
Yeah. Okay. It is coming up to 5 minutes now before the hour. As you look back on your career and you think about the beginning, what was the motivation? What made you say, I want to be a cop?
You know, I alluded to it a little bit before, and it really was, and it's a cliche you hear a lot of, very often, that is, to make a difference, to help people who need assistance, whatever that might be. And you know, I started in the ambulance business, helping people that were sick, injured, ill, or what have you, and continued on to law enforcement. And I see law enforcement every day during my career doing things that you'd never expect them to do. You know, I had the honor, I delivered a baby. I mean, how many people could sit in a room and say, I delivered a baby? Or... You know, I held someone's hand as they were expiring. And you know, that's not a pleasant thing to do, but you make a difference in people's lives. And I can honestly say that the men and women in law enforcement, not just the state police, but all law enforcement, really, that's their motivation. You know, their motivation is to make a difference. Sometimes, you know, you watch television shows and you think a policeman is a bully or what have you. That's not the case. That truly is not the case. If you see the training that the men and women endure in order to begin a career in law enforcement, it's very grueling. It's very difficult, but it also straightens them out to make sure that you understand why you're in this business. It's not a power trip. It's nothing more than trying to make it better for the people that we serve. And I often said the people we serve are our customers. They truly are. We don't want them always to come again, quite frankly. Right. But, you know, they really are our customers. And I think that's a really important part of what we do and why we do that. And I'm not just talking law enforcement. I'm talking, you know, EMS, fire service, and the like, and all the associated people that contribute to the good of the people of Connecticut.
Now, we should emphasize, because we're coming up on the top of the hour, as you said before, you're retired, but you're not going away.
That's no.
You're going to be
you're
around.
Staying right here. Staying right here.
We're staying in Connecticut, and we'll stay involved. I'm definitely going to stay involved in some capacity in public safety, public service, whatever it might be. But, you know, I'm too young, as I said before, to sit in a chair and rock away. So I'm going to keep doing something. Who knows? I may have to find a job, you know, to go back to work.
Oh, you're going to be... You know what you're going to do a lot of?
Tell me.
I can tell you right now.
Yes, sir.
You are going to get so many invitations to speak. You're going to be asked to speak to this club and that club. I mean, it's just a natural.
Well, that would be an honor. That definitely would be an honor. I'd be more than happy to do that. And I'm going to make you my agent, Brad. That's all right.
I'll volunteer.
You know, something you talked about, I listened to one of your ads, and I want to put this out there if I can. You talk about a large event you have coming up next week with the School for the Deaf. And when I was a kid in high school, we played basketball against the American School for the Deaf. And I got to tell you, it's an amazing place. It truly is. And those young folks were more enthusiastic than we were in playing the sport of basketball, and I'll never forget that. And I don't want to tell you how many years ago that was, because it's a lot of years ago, but it sticks in my head, and the work you guys are doing with that is phenomenal. That really is great that you're honoring the school.
Well, it's going to be a big Friday event. Friday, and in a few minutes we are going to meet the executive director, Jeff Braven, with his interpreter, J.K.
Lieutenant Vance, we are so honored that you spent the last hour with us. Thanks so much for coming to our studio, and thanks for all that you have done for public service in the state of Connecticut. How about that?
Thank you very much.
Our studio audience.
I appreciate that, and let me just say a public thank you to my bride, because she really made it happen. You know, without her, a lot of this could not have happened. And, you know, publicly, I want to say she's the best.
Great. Thank you.
40, how many years?
43 again? Years, right?
43, yeah.
Wow. Fabulous. Fabulous. Emotional, I should say so.